Welcome to Outlier Parenting. I'm your host, Beth Feldman. And today we're going to be talking all about coaching our kids, but not coaching them on the sidelines of a sports game. We're going to talk more about how to be the ultimate life coach for your kid as they're deciding what they want to do and, you know, with their lives from like their passion. So with me today is Brooke Jean. She is a counselor and a life coach who works with adults, but she also is working with younger teens, including her own son. And we're here to talk today about the importance of really providing that coaching and counseling experience to your child as they start developing. So thank you for joining me today, Brooke.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be on and super excited about this topic. I just love it. I love the concept.
Yeah, so well, yeah. So tell me, you know, you have been doing, you know, coaching for adults, and what made you kind of realize, you know what, I think this could also work with kids.
Definitely. So, you know, I've been doing coaching in one way or another for about 15 years, but I really just officially launched my own business and practice 2 years ago. And I noticed all of the kind of tips and tricks and things, tools basically, that I was giving my clients, my family should benefit from first. And as my son was really starting to take his music, his passion for music and his music career seriously, I thought, gosh, I really should be talking to him about goals and his time management and procrastination and accountability and all of the things that, you know, I spend every day talking to clients about. Why wouldn't my teenager benefit from that information? And when I started talking to him about these things, you know, initially I thought he would be so bored, like, oh, stop it, mom, like, stop therapizing me, stop coaching me. But his response, was pretty exciting. And that's when I realized, man, these kids are definitely coachable. Might have to change your language a little bit, but they're absolutely coachable from very early on.
And, you know, I think there really is that fine line. I mean, it's funny because I was having a conversation with my daughter today because she's going through a little bit of a rough patch at college. And there's this fine line between coaching and being the helicopter. And
totally,
you know, and I struggled because she said to me today, mom, you've asked me about that 10 times. And I said, well, I'm going to keep asking until you actually do it. So is that a helicopter or what is that?
You know, you're absolutely right. It is a fine line. And so it's about providing the framework for them to thrive in, providing the tools and the training and the concepts of like applying yourself and managing your time, but then it's also giving them the freedom to find out how they want to do it. But I think checking in is okay because quite frankly, their, you know, frontal lobe isn't fully developed yet. So they're going to miss things. But you know, I agree with you. And when my son was applying to get into a competitive school for music, I gave him the tools on what he needed to do, but I didn't do any of it for him. He had to write his own resume. He had to request his own letters of recommendation. He had to put together his portfolio, choose his piece, practice his piece. And I was there to answer questions. I was there to provide feedback, but I really wanted his application to be representative of who he is as a unique human being. And you know, I was like, oh, I don't know if this is going to be enough because I know there's moms out there doing it for their kids. Mm-hmm. But he got in and he felt good about it. And he was able to celebrate, you know, that on his own, that he was able to put those things together. So I don't know. I think checking in is okay, but doing it for them, that doesn't help them get very far.
Right. So, and I agree because I kind of feel like that's so important. It's almost as if maybe it's generational, but there was a whole generation of kids where the parents have been doing their work for them. And I at least hope that we're kind of going back to the old model, which is you've got to be self-sufficient and you've got to do this because when you get to college or a career, your mom's not going to be, you know, behind you writing the answers or filling out the form for you. You need to be independent. And that's what we're trying to raise our kids to be.
Totally. And I think about the relationship piece and how important that is and what, you know, technology is doing to that. So if you have to build a good rapport with your teachers and your instructors, because later you're going to request a letter of recommendation, that is such an important lesson for kids to learn. You can't just ask for something when you haven't done the work behind the scenes. And I really wanted my kiddo to have that lesson of, wow, have I behaved well? Have I, you know, been a good student? Have I been helpful, that I'm comfortable asking for something of someone later? And it kind of reinforces that never burn a bridge. You know, there's opportunity with everybody. Be kind, give and show up to others, because it always comes back. And so that was a really important lesson I wanted him to learn as well.
And what's your feeling on how early, like, do you start these kinds of things with your kid?
I mean, seriously, I think when they're little and you're putting together a reward chart over the chores and the way that they can help you, I think you start it that young. I think you start teaching them and talking to them and like sharing information with them and, you know, giving them the reward and the follow-up when they're, you know, old enough to understand what a reward is. And then I think as they get a little bit older, we just have to kind of adjust our style to what they care about and how we communicate it. But, you know, one of the things that I always hear about my son, Camden, and of course it's going to feel and sound like I'm bragging about him, because I am, but it's that he's always been well-spoken and very comfortable with adults and well-adjusted. And I feel like part of that is because since he was little, I spoke to him like he really understood bigger concepts and philosophies and like reaching his potential and things like that. I just always took the time to explain things. I never knew if he understood. But then like as he got older, it started translating into something different. So I don't think they're ever too young. You know, it's kind of like reading to your kids. Are they too young, ever too young to read to them? I don't think so. So start when they're little.
And the thing is that it's also the kid that's not necessarily playing sports. I mean, I think that the kid that, you know, and it's funny because we talk about coaches, it's just, you know, innate that there's the soccer coach and the baseball coach and the football coach, but you don't think about, well, what about, you know, yes, you are pursuing you might get voice lessons or music lessons, but that's different than where can you go with this? If you really are determined to do something with this, who are, you know, what could you do, you know, for the kid that isn't athletic?
Definitely.
And that, I think that that's so important to sort of still have that aspect in their life.
Absolutely. And so it's all about, you know, putting them in front of a lot of different things when they're little. So their interests and gifts can become apparent, and then really celebrating those and, you know, getting them more involved to see where that grows. And then from like a life coaching standpoint, I recommend doing that like at the maybe like fifth or sixth grade level, because once they're in junior high, you know, they're becoming adolescents. And so they might be withdrawing just a little bit from you as a parent. That's normal. And so to try asking them what their goals are and showing up as a coach for them at that point, it might be a little bit more challenging. But if you start having these conversations in fifth or sixth grade about their passion and, you know, their energy and their flow of genius and their goals and, you know, who's your support system? And, you know, if you could wake up and be doing any job that you want, what would it be? Or what wrongs do you want to make right in the world? Why not start that in fifth and sixth grade and kind of develop it as a family norm? So that way, once they are going into those adolescent years, it's already kind of something that you're doing as a family.
And that's really interesting, because I feel like, I guess I was doing it and didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, on the counseling side of things, so not necessarily the life coach, but when your child is going through something, you know, a difficult time emotionally, not knowing how to, you know, deal with like either whether it's bullying or other things that they're going through at school from a social standpoint. And, you know, you're not a professional in deal, you know, the parent themselves are not a professional to deal with it. What's your suggestion for that parent where they've got a kid that's struggling and might be different than the other kids? And I think that a lot of, you know, kids are going through that now, and parents don't know exactly what to do if they don't necessarily have the support of the school or guidance counselors to help them.
Yeah. You know, I think it starts with creating those channels of communication, keeping them open when they're younger, because if you start noticing this stuff in junior high, it's going to be harder to get information out of them. So really talking about feelings yourself and then normalizing feelings through your behavior that, you know, some days we have good days, some days we have bad days, some days we feel like a success, some days we feel like we could have been better. And it's all healthy and it's all normal. And starting to have those discussions early on and then also paying attention to ways that they like to express themselves. So a lot of kids don't know, they don't have the tools to say, you know, mom, I'm sad because I had a bad day at school, or I feel rejected because this group of folks are not letting me in. But they might express it through their drawings or their music or being active outside. I always tell parents, if you want to hear what's going on in your adolescent's life, take them on a hike. They are more likely to talk when they're moving. They feel uncomfortable just sitting there staring at you, spilling their guts and being vulnerable. They don't like it. So take them outside and throw a ball around, or take them on a hike and just see what they start to talk about, or pay attention to what they're drawing and find an outlet for them emotionally and come at it with curiosity. That's a really cool drawing. Tell me what that means, or tell me what that represents for you, without prying or without making an assumption. So those are a few things you can do to kind of set the tone to have the conversation. And also know that usually when they've got something going on and you can sense it, trust your intuition as a mom. Our intuition knows what's up, but revisit it several days later, because oftentimes when they're dysregulated, they do not know how to verbalize it, and they haven't processed any part of it yet. So if you can check back in a couple days later, you might be able to get... Oh, can you hear me now?
Hello?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. There, now you're back. Sorry.
Okay. Good. I was just saying, check back a few days later, and you might be able to get some more information out of them about what's going on emotionally and socially.
And that's interesting. I mean, because I find it's funny. My kids are two very different. I have a daughter that can get very emotional and does share a lot that's on her mind, and my son's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's funny because, you know, now, like I was saying about with my daughter, every day I keep following up with her. Everything okay today? How are you feeling? What's going on? You know, and she's like, you've asked me this over and over again. I said, well, because 4 days ago you were not happy. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like just expect that, you know, you had you were really sad a few days ago. And I just keep on, you know, I'm not just going to forget that you were sad 4 days ago. And she wants me to forget it. I'm like, I can't, like, I'm not, you know, I'm not with her right now. So I'm having that hard time trying to pull back a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when your child isn't in your house, it's sort of like, okay, short of me driving up there and giving you a hug, this is my hug when I'm asking you every day, how are you? You
know? Totally. Totally. And that's so hard. But you know what? We have to trust that we've taught our kids how to work through things. And your daughter knows where you are and she knows you're available. But we've got to trust that they can work through some of these things, because they can. But it's so hard to take a step back and watch it from the sidelines. That's got to be one of the hardest things we do as a parent. But you know you've laid a foundation. You know you've taught her everything you know. She knows that you're available. But she's going to have to go through her own trials and tribulations and work through them to continue to develop her sense of self. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of let them work through it sometimes. It's just really hard to do. And I feel you, Mama. I mean, it's borderline impossible, right? Because our instinct is to protect.
Right. You know, it's like from they were very little, you know, if they fell, you didn't want them to get the boo-boo. You did everything so that they didn't get hurt, and they always inevitably fell, and it still happened. And, you know, now as they get older, it's the rejection, whether it's the rejection in a relationship, rejection in a school, rejection in something. That is always, I mean, even for us, we've gone through that in our lives. And I think it finally took for myself, as like a woman in her 40s, to finally come to terms with the fact that, oh, if I get rejected, that's not a reflection on me. It just means what could I have done better to do it better the next time? And it took me until that, you know, this decade to realize that every time I would get rejected, I would just turn the other way and try to do something else. And trying to teach that to our kids early is so important, I think.
Yeah. And it's hard because they're going to internalize rejection, you know, when they're younger, and it's so hard to watch your kid be in that kind of pain. Mm-hmm. But they're also extraordinarily resilient beings, and you know, it's like we do our best to teach them those lessons. And so that's part of that coaching as well, is like, you know, giving them the tools for success, but also teaching them that how you handle downfalls is your character. Mm. How you handle when things don't go your way is just as important as how you handle when things do. And so it hurts, it burns, it can be frustrating, and here's some tools to work through that. And so it's like, you just got to remember, like, it doesn't always go the way we want. And also, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not enough. It means something else. And so teaching them that part too, I think, is really critical, because yeah, they're going to internalize that rejection.
Yeah. And that part is very hard, you know, because look, it's, I mean, parents got to raise their, a lot of times you raise your kids like the sun, moon, and stars set with your kid. And then all of a sudden these things happen. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is such a big, you know, just as much as we're helping them to do what they love and to be successful at it, at the same time, if it doesn't necessarily go their way right off the bat, it's emotionally, it's so hard, you know, to watch and to see them going through it. But I'm like I said, all I'm doing every day is, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Checking in.
Did you look into this instead? Are you looking for other things? Are you, you know, like constantly just behind the scenes saying, I read about this, you might want to check this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And gosh, you know, because this is her first year in college, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a huge life transition. That's such a transition for her and for you guys. So any and all experiences and feelings are so normal, because it's such a big transition, which lends itself to not knowing what's next, and therefore stress, anxiety, emotion, big emotions to come out.
Yeah. And trying to really learn how to manage that, you know, to your point about, I mean, really, I think almost dealing with the rejection part, really having the strategies to deal with that, because, you know, each time it's like little kids, little problems, big kids, bigger problems. And, mm-hmm. and kids these days going into college or applying to schools, it's a lot of stress for them. And, mm-hmm. and it's not something, I mean, I don't remember when I went through, it was difficult. But it's interesting that, you know, they have so much pressure on them these days.
I know. And there's a lot of studies going on right now about what that pressure is doing to kids. So it'll be interesting to see what the outcomes of that is psychologically.
Mm-hmm. So let's also talk about now, you know, in addition to coaching kids, you also coach moms, like adult, and in terms of in transition in their careers, whether they've been working or wanting to transition to something else or just going back into the workforce. So tell me a little bit about how you kind of like created this coaching business dedicated to that type of mom.
Yeah. So I love working with professional moms, because it's just insane what we do as women that are moms and that are professionals. And I like transition because I feel like usually an unforeseen change occurs, and it seems like it's detrimental, it seems like it's disruptive, but when working with a counselor or a coach and being really intentional during that time, you can really change the course of your life and start becoming who you really are and going after what you really want. So I've kind of designed a three-part process for women that are going through a love life or career transition, where it's all about kind of grieving what was and then becoming. So who do you want to be now that you're not in that marriage? Who do you want to be now that you just lost your corporate job. What strengths do you have? What skills do you have? What were your dreams when you were a little girl? How did you have fun before the world told you how you should have fun? And really developing a plan for what they want for this next leg of the marathon. And then the third process is just about creating your new normal now that you've got what you want really clear in your mind. And it's such an honor, and it's so cool to see women kind of shed a skin and become a more true and authentic version of themselves. And therefore, they're just happier, they shine brighter in the world. And gosh, it's just pretty energizing to see every day. So I love that work.
Yeah, and it is really interesting too, just because, you know, it's funny, between the mom who takes time off to raise her kids and then tries to get back in to, and for my instance, I'm the mom who left a job and then went off on her own. And there have been times where I thought about going back to that, like, other world, other life again.
Yep.
But it's interesting because when you're a certain age, it's the ageism part of it is playing a huge, you know, part of it is the mom that might not be technologically savvy, and the other part could be the ageism at play. So how do you coach people to deal with those, that going in, like when you're trying to find another job?
So it kind of depends on what they want to do, but are you saying like if they took a long break, let's say they were in corporate America, they took a long break and they want to get back in, but they feel like they don't have the skills or tools anymore to reintegrate?
There's that. And then there's the one that is still, you know, let's say that they're in their 40s, but everybody's looking for the millennial or someone 10 years younger than them to do the same job that they're capable of doing. Like,
yeah.
Just like the show Younger, exactly like Younger.
Yeah, totally. That's a thing, right? That's a real thing that's happening. So yeah. You know, the first thing is just getting really clear on what they want, because a lot of times we just go back to what was safe or what we know. And so it's really important that, you know, we do some self-exploration to say, well, what are my core values? What are my interests? What's my skill set? What am I passionate about? And where can I apply that? And then doing some research and, you know, maybe having coffee with somebody in the company that you're interested in working for, and maybe reaching out to, you know, an old colleague that you used to have to find out what's going on and to see what you might need in order to prepare for that interview. But definitely kind of doing some soul searching and then some research and then connecting with folks that can help you get back in. And a lot of times people are like, I don't know where to start. Start with who you know. Don't overthink it. Who's already in your circle that has an accounting job or that has a banking job or that went off on their own as an entrepreneur? And get out and have coffee and just ask questions and gather as much information as you can. And then remember what skills you have that are transferable. And then you've got to be realistic, right? So if you know that this company is not looking for you, number one, don't make an assumption. So if you really want that job, try it and see how it goes. And number two, develop a backup strategy or plan if that's not going to be ideal for you. So a lot of times I feel like people that say, well, I just want to go back to that job because it's what I knew, that isn't even actually what they really, really want. And if you're 40 and you've got, you know, 20 something years left in your career or less, let's make sure you're spending that doing something you actually want to do. So a lot of times I end up helping people come up with a business or starting something completely fresh and new. And sometimes that involves training, and sometimes that involves education. Sometimes that involves starting a business. But those are options they have as well.
And it's really interesting because I love that you said, you know, just because that last job that you remembered that you liked, like just because it's comfortable doesn't mean that it's the right place. Sometimes I always say you can never go home again. And I remember having years and years ago where I had a client that I had worked with at another PR agency, and then I joined another agency, and that same client left my old boss and hired me back to work on it. But the second time around, it was a nightmare.
And totally.
It was so funny. Like, what did I do? Why did I decide I wanted them back? I left them for a reason. And it took getting them back for me to realize, okay, I really didn't want to be there.
Exactly.
So I totally agree with that. And there are times, it's funny, every time I think to myself, yeah, it would be nice and stable for me to have a full-time job again. But then mm-hmm. I'm like, but then my schedule is not my own. And then I don't have the freedom to do everything that I love. And that wouldn't be fun for me either. So
and exactly, really exactly. So at what cost? And that's why I think it's so important to not just do what you feel like you should do or what you feel like is responsible, but taking a moment to say, but what do I want? So, you know, similar to you, I came from a corporate background and I loved leading people. I loved coaching and developing talented leaders, but I was not passionate about the retail component. And so once I could work through my own mindset and my own fear about not having that financial stability, not having a core role, not having benefits, all of that. Once I can manage my own fear, I realized I could take the parts of that job that I love, that I know I was great at, and offer it as a service in a different way. And now I get to do my favorite parts of that job, but while having my own schedule and while being able to be a mommy and having, you know, a life and having my holidays and my weekends and all those things that I wasn't able to do in corporate America. So those are the questions I like to ask folks that are in a career transition, not just, you know, what do you want to do professionally, but what's the lifestyle and mm-hmm. what are your values? If you value family, going right back into that C-suite executive position, it's not going to allow you to have as much time off or whatever that looks like. So really painting a bigger picture. And then thinking outside of the box of, well, have you ever thought of taking that skill that you did really well in that position and doing some sort of consulting mm-hmm. and just helping people see that there's other ways to make money? And sometimes you just have to get resourceful and creative, but there's so many opportunities that, you know, we've got to at least consider those things.
Well, and it's interesting. Someone had mentioned to me the other day that within like the next 5 years, like almost 50% of Americans are going to be in the freelance market, mm-hmm. whether it's having that full-time job with a side hustle or doing the side hustle full-time, you know. And it's I guess in a way for me, I've been doing this now for over 10 years. And I guess I feel fortunate because I'm always just trying to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and it's interesting you're saying that, because I do, when I think about it, I do appreciate all the things that I've done in the last 10 years. And I have been able to still do a couple of those things that I love. And, you know, and it's just, I guess, as my kids get older and the tuition bills come in, it's just sort of like, okay, then how do I just make sure that I'm bringing in enough so that I don't ever have to go back to being somebody, you know, on somebody else's time instead of mine.
Yes. Totally. And the other piece to that, why I think so many folks are going into freelance and into the entrepreneurial world, is because so many things are going to be replaced by technology and robots that you really have to think about that. You really have to think about what jobs are going to be eliminated because a machine can do it. And mm-hmm. whether you agree with that or not, it's a reality that's happening. And the more I've done research on that, I'm like, wow. That's kind of scary. So, you know, yeah, what's that side hustle? What's plan B? It's always good to have a plan B.
Yeah, I kind of have a plan B, plan C. My friend makes fun of me. He's like, how many businesses do you have now?
I know you do. You got a few, but you know what? Don't you feel like, because I do counseling, I do coaching, and then I also do some consulting. I work with small, medium-sized businesses that need help with their culture and their leadership development. And people say, gosh, how do you, you know, why do you do that? Because I love the diversity of the work. I love that some days I'm in my sweats all day and I'm a mommy, and other days I am helping someone heal through a divorce, and other days I'm in front of a group of professionals doing a training. I like doing different things. I don't want to get bored. I want to also have a lot of opportunity for as long as I want to work. And so while, you know, some people may say you got to have one really specific niche and you got to go hard for that niche, my story is a little bit different because I kept my doors open, and it's becoming more and more clear who I work best with. But I also know that there's longevity in all three of these avenues, and I love all three of them. So rock on with your plan C and D, sister, because you're not going to get bored.
This is true. I love it. I love it. And I know you've also done things where you do courses online. So can you tell us a little bit about like the workshops that you offer?
Yeah. So I haven't like officially done an online course just yet, but I've done a ton of in-person courses and training, everything from how your energy affects your life and your business to effective communication and conflict resolution to maximizing the opportunity of being in transition and kind of identifying the core energy blocks that are getting in your way, which is all about managing your mindset to be successful. And that's a lot of the stuff that I love to work with my kiddo on. And he eats it up. He thinks it's so interesting to talk about these psychological core blocks that get in our way of being our best. And so next, what I want to do, because, you know, you were on my Mom's Living a Life They Love interview series where I interviewed successful working moms on how they do both. Kind of what came out is the themes that we struggle with as working moms, which is like guilt and time management and self-care, taking time for yourself, managing stress, all of those things. Now I'm putting together kind of like a 6-week online course for moms who will get a weekly coaching call and will get some really good, you know, counseling and coaching skills on how to work through those obstacles that we come up against when we're juggling a career that we're passionate about and also kids and husbands or wives that we're passionate about as well.
I love it. So where can people find you and sign up for that course if they're interested?
Yeah. So they can find me online. So www.brookwithanejeanllc.com. You can find me on social media. I've got a private group on Facebook for working moms called Moms Living a Life They Love. You can follow me and post things there. And yeah, check it out. I'd love to support you.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. This was like, I felt like I had a counseling session today. This was fantastic.
You can always call me for those. I love those.
I mean, I had advice for my daughter. I had advice for myself. I feel so much better. It's all good.
You just got to remember that you're doing a great job, mama. You know, like your kiddo found something that she loves, that she's good at, and you have supported her. And that's more than enough. That's fabulous. So I think a lot of times we just need to remember, even though there's a ton of hype and competition and pressure and stress, you got to remind yourself, like, you have done all the right things and you're still doing enough, and it is enough. And take a deep breath and drink a glass of wine and it's going to be good.
Ah, well, I'm so glad because today's Friday. So this is my wine night. So yeah. I'm all in on that. So thanks again for joining me today. And I tune in again to Outlier Parenting next week. Thanks.
Awesome.